I think it's always, should always be, whether it's your marriage, whether it's your finances, or whether whatever part of your life, whenever you veer off of the path that God intends or what God has told you, as you said, there's a lot of tidbits that God gives us that are practical for everyday living. And if we ignore those, then there's going to be some stuff in your life. I want to stand before God. I know I'm going to be justified, but there's a lot of stuff I'm going to have to answer for. I ain't looking forward
to
it.
Is it going to be a sad thing?
It was one of those things, again, where the older kids can stay by themselves, but I was thinking about, well, what am I going to do with Christian? Because I hate to just drop him off over down a week here for nap time, which is pretty much what this is.
Yeah.
So
go in there and take a nap.
Yeah, just go in here and take a nap, and I'll be back.
I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm starting to learn, this weekend especially, I've napped every evening.
Really?
It's almost, if I could just wait about two more hours, it's about bedtime, but after dinner, I lay down on the couch, lay out in the swing or something.
Or get and wake up about 9 o'clock.
About 9 o'clock, yeah.
Sit still is the worst thing for me, man.
Yeah. I'm telling you, watching a NASCAR race, that second segment nap is the best.
Oh, nap car. Nap car is the best.
Nap car.
I cannot.
I keep sleeping
too
far,
though.
I miss the end.
Stay awake for it. But it's the sound of the engines. It's the guys talking. And it's... Woo, and then the worst is when a rain delay comes on. I'm going to be out.
Well, ideally, I would watch the beginning of it, because you're kind of excited at the beginning.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then when I get into about that second segment, fall asleep, and then I'd wake up with about 50 to go. But sometimes my body don't know it's 50 to go, and I sleep all the way through the end.
Now, Martinsville's a hard one to sleep through.
Yeah.
It really is, now, because it's so small and a small track. But those big ones where they get stretched out or they run in a line, man, I can be out in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Well, I got some good naps in this. I need to move it up in the day a little bit, though. By 7 o'clock, it's like just...
Yeah, you know, yeah. We always...
up and you'll be good in about 2 hours, going to be
in. I married a lady that loves a nap now. I'm going to tell you that.
I've never liked.
On the weekends, come 2 or 3 o'clock, I can tell you now, we're gonna be having our eyes shut.
I've never liked naps until the last year or two, and now I take them all the time.
Have you watched ESPN 30-30?
Four.
Jim Valvano?
Yeah, Survive and Advance. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's one. I've seen that in a while. Okay. I just saw it
on...
It's the first time?
No. Oh. But I just...
did you cry?
30 for 30.
Did you cry?
Well, a lot of people did.
I did. That's the best one I think they've ever done. That one in the U. I love the U. About Miami.
University?
Of Miami. Yeah, okay. Their football team.
Yeah, their football
when they
team.
Were so good... And
for a couple
doing all those things and
Johnson
all the
there.
All the illegal stuff that they did, and then they had the return of the U, which was even better when they came back, which I just enjoyed that. During that time, I was a teenager at that time, and so Miami University, oh man, you loved the Flash and the whatnot.
And then they got in the ACC and didn't do anything.
Yeah, we ACC'd them.
Yeah.
Everybody, we'll ACC'd
them so
real
good.
Quick.
We were so excited.
Florida State. ACC'd them. It took a while, but we ACC'd them pretty quick. And so I don't know. I'm hoping we're going to ACC Bill Belichick.
Miami, when they first came in, I guess they were still good for
they were decent.
A little bit.
They were real
Carolina
good.
Carolina beat them the first time.
Bernie Kosar, was that the one? The
he came late. He was a little later.
Who was the other quarterback?
Well, you had Kosar, and then they had the boy Jim Kelly played for him. I mean, they had a bunch of good ball players.
Played for Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, he first went to the USFL, then he went
to
Buffalo. The USFL.
Gabe asked me this morning on right back if I thought the Chiefs dynasty was over. I said, weren't they just in the Super Bowl 3 months ago?
Just because they didn't win a Super Bowl doesn't mean the dynasty's over. I think going to the Super Bowl is pretty impressive, too.
Yeah. I said, I know they lost it pretty bad. I said, but let's, I said, Mahomes has made the AFC Championship game every year of that he started. I said, if he gets knocked out of the division, then we can start talking about the dynasty ending, maybe.
Yeah.
But or if they miss the playoffs, maybe.
Yeah, they're all right. They're all right. Yeah. And then, the Buffalo Bills had a good run there. They never won anything much.
Yeah, they were in, was it four straight that they were in the Super Bowl?
They won a bunch of Super Bowls.
It's four. I know they didn't win it.
If I'm not mistaken, they've only made four, but it was those four in a row, and they lost them all.
Yep.
So
lost everyone.
Every one of them.
Poor fellas. And, but that's all right. It's all going to be the Commanders.
If Jim Kelly had won one, he'd been probably ranked higher all time than he is now.
He'd be on a bunch of lists. Yeah. I think he's still going to be a Hall of Famer.
Is he not in
there? Yeah, I would think he's in there by now.
I don't know if he's in there yet or not. I got a machine I can ask.
Ask your machine.
I think he is.
Ask your machine.
Ask your machine. We need to know if he's there yet or not. I think he is.
Yeah, he's been retired forever.
Hey, Siri, is Jim Kelly in the NFL Hall of Fame? Let's see.
Jim Kelly was inducted.
Oh, in 2002. Wow.
Yeah.
He's been in there 23 years.
Yeah, where have you been for so long?
I didn't think he was that good. Well, you know what? To me, I hate to say this. Time, it's the 90s and the 2000s. Mm-hmm. It don't seem like 25 years. To me, no Jim joke. Kelly was still playing 10, yeah. 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And when in reality, he must have quit in the 80s. Or he had to quit in the 90s to be inducted in 92 because you got to be out a couple of years.
I think it's 5 years, so yeah. I think he retired 90. That would have been 97 for the first bell. I think he was about 96, 97.
Wow. You might be thinking about Doug Flutie.
I tell you what, that's when I got married. I guess you get married and you move on.
Yeah.
Because nothing else matters after that, right?
I guess. Or that's when we started having kids, too. That's when you really got married in 94, started having kids. That's when time just stopped.
Yeah. Speaking about being married, let me ask you a question.
Yep.
Submission.
Okay.
I think I remember.
So Ephesians 5.
Yes. Woman submitting to her husband.
Okay.
I think that scripture has been taken so out of context.
Okay.
From both sides,
for real.
From the man's side, you know, you got to obey me. From the woman's side,
I'm in charge
here. Yeah. That the liberation movement has.
Sure. I ain't submitted to no man.
But it says submit to your husband, not to every man.
Right.
But I think the world thinks it's to every man. Yeah. So I started thinking about that. Now, can you be a female president? I don't see why you couldn't. You know, but for the family of God, the order of the family, that's God right. has predestinated that part as man and then woman. But that don't mean that they are above each other. They're mm-hmm. really the same,
yeah.
just in a different way.
Well, there's a couple.
And also, we have to remember that who Peter is talking to, too.
Right, or Paul.
Yeah, I mean, Paul. No.
Well, Ephesians 5 is be submissive, but Peter says it too.
Yeah, I was on Peter.
Okay.
Well, and who he was talking right. to. And he was talking to some wild people. So,
true.
And I think at that time, and you can verify this or not, because I know you would know it right off the top of your head, but I think at that time in the Gentile society that women were, were they pretty more dominant?
Well, I know in the Jewish society that we're not.
I know.
I don't know that, I don't think liberation was even close to being happening at that time. I think that's why when I look at Jesus and he elevates a lot of women. In fact, the women were the first to hear the gospel. And so as far as being submitted and what submission means in that regards is, God, as God created, go back to the Garden of Eden, man first, then woman. And it was, and he says for that reason they leave their husband and wife. So God is the one who ordained marriage. And he has it so that the male is the spiritual leader. Does not mean he's the boss. It does not mean he is the one who calls all the shots. But what it does mean is this, and this is what's scary. God's going to be the one who holds him accountable.
Yeah.
I used the illustration many months ago about a football team. The quarterback is not the best athlete.
Right.
Oftentimes, it's not the best athlete. It might be a running back. It might be a wide receiver. But who the coach is going to hold responsible to run the play that he has sent in is the quarterback.
Yeah.
Why didn't you call to play? Why did you turn that way when you're supposed to turn and hand the ball to him? That's going to be the one. And so the quarterback is the husband. The coach is God. And it may be someone else.
So it takes everybody to win.
It does. But at the same time, it doesn't always mean that the quarterback's the best athlete. Doesn't mean that he's the one that he may not even be the one who calls the plays. Yeah. The coach is going to call the plays most of the time.
I just think The world has taken Peter's context, his what he says, completely out of context.
Well, which verse are you talking about with Peter?
I think it's 1 Peter 2, 6 and 7.
Yeah.
But if you go to Ephesians 5, before he gets into talking about husband and wife, he says, be mutually submitted to each other.
Yes.
And so I think there is a key, too, that we need to take into this thing is that we're all submitted to each other. Nobody's
above each other.
Right.
We honor
others above ourselves. Is it 1 Peter 2, 7? Am I right there? Check 3. It's where he talks about the adornment of a woman.
Yeah. 3. In the same way, you wives be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of you of them are disobedient to the word, so it's 3.
1 Peter 3. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've had this conversation with a few people. One good friend of mine, we were talking one night about it. I told him, I said, you know, it's funny that the more I read the Bible, there's the staples of the Bible, you know, loving all of the ones that we know. But I said, when you really get into reading the whole thing, there's a whole bunch of little tidbits and tips for living and things like that. I said one in particular that I've really disregarded, I guess, for most of my life, and I'm starting to see now, is there's a lot of stuff in there about marriage and how God intended for marriage to be, and some things that I didn't realize, and things that I've certainly done wrong from the male's perspective, and then also looking at it from the other perspective. But yeah, there is the wives being submissive to husbands, but I don't take that as a, you know, chauvinistic
way
for us to take that and bully it around. Like you're saying, right. What I'm saying is that it should be a partnership mutually submitted to each other, and that is totally the opposite of how both genders view relationships nowadays, especially when you look at like my generation, probably more so than even y'all's. Because everybody...
Well, I'm not as old as he is, but...
I'm just counting both of y'all as old as me as to mid, right?
We're all
pretty close, probably.
I'm more closer to your age, probably. That's what I would think.
But it's that word submitted.
It's that word.
Everybody my age wants to submit to anything.
Yes.
If we're being real honest about it. Yeah. We're all about us. We're the kings of our domain, the queens of our domain.
It's basically any authority.
Right.
And that's our human nature.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Genesis 3 when it says that Eve, you're going to want authority over your husband want to be that, but you won't. And people would say, well, it's because of the fall that we have submission. No, you got to go back before the fall. It was from creation. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's not because of we live in a sinful world that it's that way. No, it's because of the way God ordained the family, God ordained, and even when you bring it to the church, and again, doesn't mean women can't serve the Lord. Man, they sure have. Women have played a key role in my life. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to certain positions or certain roles, pastors, whatnot, we really need to think about, all right, now, how does that work itself out? I'm of the notion that I believe the pastor should be a male. I also hold to a deacon being a male. I know people will argue that and try to twist the scriptures a little bit and try to make it this, that, and the other. And I'm going to go always back to, I just need to go back to creation. And even in the judges, you have some female judges that made a huge, Deborah and several others that made a huge contribution. And when all the men were scared and running around like a bunch of wimps, mm-hmm. Deborah stepped up and led the nation. So, mm-hmm. I've seen females that can lead and do all kinds of things. I just know that's the way God intended.
What's
that.
The Greek word for submission in Peter? Do you know?
Well, it's hypo, meaning under.
Okay.
And it's like under.
Well, I don't know. I'm asking.
No, it really means like under rowing or under serving or underneath is what it is. So hypo is the first part of the Greek word meaning under. And what it means is, again, authority more than anything else, or who God's going to hold accountable. That doesn't mean that the female's not accountable either. All of us are accountable before God.
Well, I mean, I would think
but
so.
But as far as the family goes, and that's what I challenge each and every couple that I do premarital counseling, when I take them through that passage is, listen, young buck that's about to get married, God's going to hold you accountable.
In what way? Tell me.
I think he holds us accountable for... And again, doesn't matter whether your child makes the right decisions or not.
Yeah.
It's how you parent, how you love, how you demonstrate the gospel. Mm-hmm. Are you leading your wife? Are you nurturing? Are you caring? Look at what it says in Ephesians 5. It tells the male, I mean, all the female's roles is submit mm-hmm. and to respect. That's it. But then you look at the rest of the passage, and it tells the husband, love your wife as yourself, to basically nourish and nurture and cherish present her as sanctified. I mean, it has to do with spiritual growth. It has to do with making sure that she's growing in the Lord. And I always tell them, you can't give what you ain't got.
Okay. I get that, and I understand that, and I believe the same. But tell me this. This is where it becomes vague to me. What is the penalty? Everybody says, well, you're going to be held accountable. What's accountability?
Well, I mean, you're all going to stand before the Lord.
Yes. Well, we're in two different areas. I mean,
that's going to be part of it is, yes. I think you're going to have to give it an answer of, hey, man, you were supposed to be this for your family. Well, why weren't you?
If you had the great white judgment, it don't matter what you do.
Right.
You're already condemned, but I'm talking about...
But this is saved people anyway.
Yes. Yes.
He's writing to the church.
So what is the consequence?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to face some consequences on earth if you don't... I think it's always, should always be, whether it's your marriage, whether it's your finances, or whether whatever part of your life, whenever you veer off of the path that God intends or what God has told you, as you said, there's a lot of tidbits that God gives us that are practical for everyday living. And if we ignore those, then there's going to be some stuff in your life. But I believe there's also going to be, I don't want to stand before I want to stand before God. I know I'm going to be justified, but there's a lot of stuff I'm going to have to answer for. I ain't looking forward
to it. Is it going to be a sad time?
I believe there is. I believe it is.
Oh, well, Revelation speaks of a half an hour or something.
Well, it talks about wiping away tears,
yes.
Which tells me there must be a tear.
Is that, well, you can have tears of joy, too.
But I don't know that context
would
get
okay.
anything of joy out of it.
No, I don't know.
I mean, it's basically he's going to be there to comfort and that.
Yes.
So,
tears away from your eyes.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I think one of the things that I'll never forget a Sunday school class I was in, to where the teacher basically said, one day, imagine standing before God and you're having to give a justification of your actions. Again, I'm forgiven. Mm-hmm. I get that.
Yes.
But I'm going to be held accountable for the Bema seat.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if there's someone that God presented me that was an opportunity to share the faith and I said, I'm not going to do it at this time. And I don't know that I'm going to find out what the ramifications of that disobedience was. But there's going to be a heartbreak for me that, man, what if that person didn't come to know Christ because I chose to be disobedient? I'm sorry, but that would break my heart, and I know it breaks the Father's heart.
Yes.
So I'm just saying, I don't know that there'll be much crying in heaven, and I'm not saying there will, but I would break my heart, and I think it breaks his.
Well, then, what is the Bema Seat Awards too?
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be great joy and great sorrow.
I think so. And the joy, you know what you do with your rewards.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this. We talked about this.
You're going to put them at Christ's feet. Mm-hmm. So,
well, think about this. We talked about this last week, the week before, about how there were sins that I didn't realize I was committing until after the fact. And then when I start to think about some of those now, they break my heart, where at the time I was doing them, I didn't realize they were sins.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine part of the that setting is kind of that on steroids, right? There's going to be a lot of things that we see that we did wrong from that we now see from God's perspective. And the little bit of heartache that I have now for the sins that I was committing 10 years ago, I didn't realize where I imagined that take that and blow it up quite a bit when I can now see it in God's presence and with his glory and all the missteps that I really made and what they cost people or what they cost the kingdom.
That's the way I see it. And again, nothing that tells us other than it says that it's, you know, good and bad. Your deeds are going to be weighed. Your works are going to be weighed, good and bad.
Peter mentions that. So
now I'm sitting here I got to answer for the bad ones. That's bad.
But I think there's also, you know, you're talking about what is the punishment. Well, there's almost like two different.
Because it's not clear.
Right. And I think sometimes we can take the Bible maybe and turn it into, We got two different types of punishment, right? We've got, is this going to cost me eternal punishment, or is this just going to cost me some other
some
type
headache.
Of punishment? Right, some headache, some right? Heartache, and it's some almost trouble. Like two get. If this is going to cost me heaven, right. Well, then that's a different. But if it's just going to cost me a little bit of heartache, or maybe I'm going to feel a little guilty in heaven, but I'm still in heaven, right. Well, then that's okay. Well, it shouldn't be that way. What's the penalty going to be for not doing that? Well, divorce, bad relationships, strained relationships. Yeah. Over 50% of marriages now end in divorce. Right. So that might be one of the punishments. Just like, what's the punishment going to be for drinking? Well, health problems, feeling like crap in the exactly. morning, all these. Like, not all of these punishments necessarily are. Some of them are here now.
and may not occur anything that's going to be, you know, major.
Right.
Hangover or whatever. Yeah. But at the same time, anytime you get outside of God's standards, you run a risk of hurting yourself.
Yes.
As we've said, when God says thou shalt not, it's thou shalt not hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And so anytime you get outside of that, that's, I think, the punishment's going to be. It's going to find out, or it's going to be something that's going to catch up
with
you.
It's not
going to
work out well.
Yeah.
I had that talk with Reese this week. She's gotten a little bit of trouble a lot lately. And her mama called me the other day, and she was mad. I mean, Heather was not too happy. And it was one of those things where I told Heather, I was like, you know, once I already know you've already chewed her out, I kind of get a little bit more good cop because she's already caught the wrath.
Yeah, she caught that wrath.
And there reason me to, you know, pile on. But I ended up doing this. I've never done this before, and I was really hesitant to even do it. And Reese handled, or I'll get to that part. The reason that I was hesitant to do it, Reese addressed it like immediately, and I'll get to that. But anyway, what I ended up doing, I was talking to Heather, and I said, what's the common denominator in all these things that we've gotten onto in the last little bit? And it's pride, and it's thinking she's the center of attention, and she's the queen of the world. And so I started thinking about it. I said, you know, we talked about taking her iPad away, and I said, look, we've done that 100 times, and I was remembering you having to write Psalms with 119, I think you said. I said, I'm going to make her do it. So I've not the Psalm, but I looked at, I think I did John 15,
right.
I think, and Matthew 6, I think. Maybe Matthew 5.
Sermon on the Mount, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe it's Matthew 5.
Matthew 5 is the very first, is the Beatitude.
I think it was that.
Blessed are the poor in spirit.
I think it was like Matthew 5, 1 through 12, and like John 15.
That's the Beatitudes.
Yeah. So, I didn't like the idea of making the Bible be punishment.
That was the part I didn't like.
That was the part that I was worried about. So as soon as I walk in there and tell Reese what she's got to do, she says, is this my punishment? I said, no, and that's what I wanted to make sure you understand.
That's right, that you understand.
I don't want you to think that I'm punishing you by making you read the Bible and write the Bible. What I do want you to understand is, I know you're 8 years old and you don't love reading the Bible. It's a little over your head and you don't really understand it all. I said, but the fact of the matter is, there's some really important stuff in this thing that I have learned over the last few years that I should have learned a long time ago.
Sure, wish I'd have known when I was younger.
Yeah, and what you need to understand is what you just said, thou shalt not hurt yourself. The reason that God doesn't want us to play that role of being the in the middle of everything and the center of attention is, how many fights do you have that are not necessary? Do you like to fight? Do you enjoy that? No, of course not. And she brought up, I think Heather told me this, that, you know, she says, well, friends fight all the time. And Heather said, well, no, me and my friends don't fight all the time. If we're fighting all the time, why are we friends? And I said, I couldn't even tell you the last time I was in a fight with my friends. And I can tell you a bunch of things my friends have done that have made me mad. And I can probably tell you a few things that I know I've done that have made them mad. But we just choose not to fight because it's not fun.
Yeah.
You know, what's the point? So, but the point of that whole thing is that, yeah, there's all kinds of and part of it is, yes, he wants to see us be kind to each other and to love our neighbor. That brings him glory. But the other thing is, we are a part of that kingdom, right? And he doesn't want us creating our own suffering either.
Yeah.
That's why he tells us he knew what he was talking about when he told us to do this stuff.
And you know, and going back to, and this is kind of going off a little bit more, but I just wanted to say this. Part of being a parent is knowing how to discipline. Mm-hmm. Discipline is not always spanking. Yeah. Discipline is not always punishment. Discipline has to involve with making disciples, teaching them how to be disciplined people. So a lot of times it's rewarding the good behavior or doing things that stirs or steers them towards good behavior. And sometimes it involves a punishment. Sometimes it may be involved. Hey, here's some verses dealing with pride. Mm-hmm. Here's some verses dealing with fighting. Here's some verses dealing with what a friend really looks like.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And you know, that to me helps them to know, oh, okay, this is maybe to see the error of their ways in a way if they can. But, you know, I'm just, discipline does not always involve just, oh, okay, you know, break, or as my dad would say, he could whip out his belt over his pants so fast it'd make your head spin. I don't think he hit a loop. I don't know how he could do it.
They're fast. I remember those days.
And then when he pulled it out and it hit that air, I was like, oh,
crap.
It's like, I'd straighten up real fast. And it's one of those, but that's not always discipline.
Yeah.
Discipline is helping them to make the right decisions.
That's on borderline child abuse.
Yeah.
I mean, you did what you had to do, but, you know, some of that stuff could have been borderline child abuse. You know?
Well, in today's time, it might be, but I'm thankful for everyone I got.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not critical.
Yeah.
But just see how it's
evolved. And
so
when it says who the Lord loves,
today,
he chastens or he disciplines, doesn't always mean that there's punishment there. It might be that he's helping us to know the right decisions.
Yeah.
So, but I think what's the punishment going to be, or what's the and maybe the word punishment isn't the right word. What's going to be the ramifications?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are the results? The results can be numerous things.
I tell you what, that belt made me make a lot of right decisions. Helped me make a lot of right decisions.
And
the
quickly.
Fear of it.
And quickly.
Oh yes.
Yeah, the fear of it especially.
But I was just saying, what I was talking about is, you know, sometimes I think, because you can see it, and you can see a lot of this in just our political ads. Everything's out of context.
Yeah.
What you see them say one thing, then they say another thing. Well, they might have been talking about the same thing, but they were coming at different angles.
They were trying to make it
mean
something else.
Yeah. So and I think the world does that with the scriptures as well.
Sure.
Because it all flows. Now, there are some things that are a little tough to understand, but for the most part, 99% of it flows pretty well to me. I see no contradictions or, with the scriptures at all.
I think once you dive into it, and one of the key things is let scripture interpret scripture.
Yes.
So that when you have something that's a little hard to understand, all right, let's take it to another passage that's dealing with the same topic or something that may give us a little bit more clarity, and eventually you'll find the answer. I mean, I'm running into that right now. There's a promise in Deuteronomy, or there's a verse in Deuteronomy. I don't know if it's a promise, but there's a verse in Deuteronomy that says, there will not be any poor in Israel. Wait a minute. Don't take that as a promise.
Yeah.
Well, but here's what God was saying is, we take care of each other so much so that there shouldn't be any poor.
Yes.
And then he has like the law of the kinsman redeemer and some of the other things that we have that can help prevent that. And so, but that's one of the things Israel was constantly, most of the prophets were badgering them, or not badgering them, but trying to correct them, preaching to them about, you're taking advantage of the poor. You know, you're not helping the poor. All you want is another dollar in your pocket.
And you take one scripture out of the Bible. It don't flow with the whole Bible. I mean, what you're doing or illustrating. And like, I guess since we're getting ready to come up on the resurrection, we got three different accounts. Well, four different. But let's just talk with Matthew, Mark, Luke. They're all different.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they all different? Well, I mean, I've been in court before, and everybody's telling the truth, but they're just telling you what they saw.
Yeah.
Not the whole. And that's what I remember. I mean, I key in on your blue shirt. He probably keyed in on your hair, your gray hair.
You already watched football. They do instant replay.
That's not that good.
Yeah, watch instant replay. That's a good illustration.
Well, think about it. How many times do you see on a goal line review, you might from this angle be able to see that the ball broke the plane at this point in time. You can't see if his knee was down.
Right.
And then this other angle, you can see that his knee was not on the ground, but you can't quite see if the ball broke the plane, but lining those two things up, you can see, you can almost time stamp it in a way and figure out ways to look.
Where was his knee down or not?
Right. And I think at one point, probably in NFL history, that they might not have, that might not have counted as conclusive evidence, but as the video has gotten better and better and they've been able to line them up better, they've been able to see that, okay, this doesn't say score and this doesn't say score, but this plus this does prove score, and there you go. And I think sometimes it, that can be kind of a, an example sort of how
it's all from different angles.
Right.
Yeah. Who saw what.
There's three refs.
Yeah.
And, you know, now games last 4.5 hours.
That's right. Yeah. And they still get them wrong.
And the call on the field.
Somehow Dallas still gets every call to go their way. I don't know.
Dallas.
I can't stand it when I am positive that I saw what I saw, and they don't even review it. Sorry, this one is inside 2 minutes, and that has to come from the booth, and we don't
NCAA's,
need to review
that. That's been the thing in NCAA, but it does slow the game down tremendously.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I think in the NBA, they only get allowed two.
Yeah, and I kind of like that.
Yeah. And if you use them, you use them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you lose them. But they like to wait till the towards the end of the game.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to burn them up on a play when you might be up by 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Something you were talking about on Sunday, I didn't bring my little black book with me today. I thought I had it all, but I guess I didn't have it packed up. So I don't have my little black book, but I do know this was a topic that I was going to bring up, and you kind of touched on it a little bit Sunday. Sometimes we can get – I'm thinking about what you brought up in 2 Samuel, David building the temple, and he had been given an awful lot, and he thought, I'm going to do something. I'm going to do God a solid.
I'm the king. I'm the king, and I'm going to help God out. You know, now that I'm the king, let me do something for God.
Yeah.
And look, to some degree, there's sometimes we want to say, you know, God, you've blessed me. I want to give back to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just the way that David was coming at it was the key. I mean, he didn't consult God. He didn't ask him, God, is there something, Lord, what do you want me to do? I'm at peace. You've blessed me. So, God, is there, you know, somebody that you want me to bless or something to do? No, it was just, I'm going to build him a temple.
Do you think he was prideful or he was just wanting to do something for God?
I think, I'm going to be honest with you. I think down deep, I think David had fallen into, like I said Sunday, the trap that Israel was warned against. When you get into the promised land and you get comfortable. You're going to think, I did all this, and so now let me do this for God. So I do think there was a little bit of pride there, a little bit of, I'm going to just build him a house. And if you look, after you get past verse 5, where verse 1 through 3 is king, 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 king. Verse 5, David says, go tell my servant, or tell Nathan, go tell David, my servant. And then basically he says, oh, you want to build me a house? Did I ask you for a house?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's where you get it that, okay, it must have been something with some pride, because God basically says, I don't remember asking you for a house. I'm doing all right where I'm at.
Do you think he had such – to me, it would be like, I don't know if he has really the right view of God. God don't need no house. He created you.
Think about this. The Ark of the Covenant had been out of Jerusalem for years upon years. Saul didn't do anything about it. David tries to move it up, and they do it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Gets a man killed doing that. Yes. But then they finally figure out, oh, this is the way we need to move it, the way God instructed. So they move it, they get it there, and it's been sitting in a tent for years. And David looks around and says, hey, I'm living in a cedar house. Maybe we ought to build a temple. And look, shortly thereafter, God did say, I want a temple built. And Solomon, except David, you're not going to do it. Why? Because you got blood on, you're a man of war. You got blood on your hands. I'm going to let Solomon
explain that to me.
I mean, let's be honest. David is not the most, what's the way to put it? David had a lot of things in his life that, I know he's a man after God's own heart, but there's a lot of things I wouldn't want in my life if I was David.
I'll tell you what.
A murderer, adulterer. He was a man of war, meaning that he had killed folks and had to because he was in battle.
Let's not skim over the fact, because I didn't, before I read the story for the first time. I didn't quite connect that he wasn't just a murderer and an adulterer. He was an adulterer who murdered to cover up the adultery.
Exactly. Yeah. This is all one piece. Yeah. This is all in one fell swoop. He became all of this.
But it wasn't an isolated incident. He had killed women and children before.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He was a man of war, whether he was running from Saul or whether he was king. And so I think that's part of it, that God said, let's hold tight. God could have easily said, you got blood on your hands, or you're, that could easily have just gone to Uriah and said, I'm going to let Solomon build it.
Well, and that, too, when Saul got jealous, he only killed 1,000. David killed 10,000. That was some truth.
That was because he killed Goliath. Saul's a warrior. That's cool.
So look, they actually overestimated?
I don't know that he had killed 10,000 people.
It's a lot.
I don't know that Samson killed over 10,000. I know he killed quite a few with a jawbone of a donkey, but 10,000's a lot.
10,000. They were just scared of him.
And when they sung that song, David had just beat Goliath. That's all.
Yeah, and do you? Well, speaking of Samson, why?
Wow, we're gonna. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you brought that up.
Okay.
Because I was. What did? Why were the Philistines scared of Samson?
I think if you can capture a bunch of foxes and catch their tails on fire and burn up a city, you're doing
pretty
good.
Where was the strength coming from?
Doesn't matter. Does it really matter? Do I got to know where your strength's coming from? If I see you whip. Several hundred men with a jawbone.
But if I see how much muscle he had, I don't think he was. That's why they were confused.
Well, the way he acted when it come to women, I don't think he. I think I picture him as a 98-pound weakling that could somehow do something strong. But then again, he may have been the most.
So where was his source of strength? I mean, I think they were just puzzled. He's doing all this stuff, but he don't look like he can do it.
Yeah. Well, they were frightful of him. I'd be scared of him too.
But we can move forward now.
Yeah. Thank you.
But the point I was going to get to with the David thing that I had, we get way off track here sometimes. That's okay. We can get so caught up trying to do things for God that we forget to do things with God.
Absolutely.
In our lives, especially.
I like that.
You're running a church. You're running the deacons. We're all trying to do things for God. And we get busy and we get a lot of different things, but it's real easy to look up sometimes and realize, you know what, I didn't really consult with God on how he wanted me. I didn't even really ask God if he wanted me to run this Sunday school class or if he wanted me to teach this class. You know, you can
get busy.
You've got to, I don't think there's anything wrong with David wanting to do something out of gratitude back to the Lord.
Being thankful is a great thing.
But, you know, I wrote in my notes on Sunday, you can't out-bless God. And I think the way David was trying to pay, I think I've talked about it before, paying back God. Like, what makes you think you can pay him back?
Yeah.
The fact that you think you can pay him back is a sin. It's a prideful sin to even think that. But I think it's okay to want to, to want to bless God, certainly. But to think that you can, that you can do anything that's going to even move the needle for him means you're missing the point on how big he really is. And how do you walk that line? We certainly don't want to just go around not trying to bless God because, what does God need me for anyway? No, he does want us trying to bless him and trying to glorify him and walking our lives in that way, but doing it humbly. And the only way you're going to do that is doing it with him. You're not going to do anything for God unless it's with him.
That's right. I think you're 100% right. And that's where the relationship comes in. That's what, you know, for David not to even seek any counsel or go to the Lord and pray about it and say, you know, Lord, is there something you want me to do? Or Lord, here I am, send me, or do whatever you want to with me. And so I think that's where David got in trouble first and foremost was that.
And I think it's a dangerous area. There's a lot of different pitfalls in life, but one of the ones that can slip you into that self-righteous Pharisee really, really quick is doing a lot of things for God without consulting him. Because if you're not doing it with him, what's your guard against being prideful? I mean,
you can tell yourself not to be prideful, but deep down in your heart, you're going to be that way, or you're going to start to feel, oh boy, I'm so tired because I've done so much for God lately. He must be so grateful. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah. He's the only guard you have against it.
My 5-star chart.
Pride, like you say, pride's a moving target, and it can happen to us very quickly and fast and easily.
And it can be over something, yeah, over silly something, too. It doesn't even have to be that, ooh, I did something great. It can just be. Yeah. Or, I mean, look, pride can take shape in so many different ways. It can be pride in what I've done. It can also be pride that leads to your feelings getting hurt when nobody, you know, really meant to hurt your feelings. Pride can be that, oh, I'm supposed to be doing that in the church and not, you know, someone else. Position.
I used to watch some of these mafia shows, where they called them, you know, some of them, and they were, they're bragging how, they got away with it. Nobody touched me, and that kind of thing. So, but they're still prideful that they did that. You know, they were still like, you should have known me when I was like this.
Were you watching Gangland?
FBI files.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Catching Gotti. I mean, all of them.
I didn't know. I will
tell you this. We went to New York, and we're a place. Went to New York for about a week, and I ate at the restaurant where Gotti. Killed. What was his name? Paul Castellano, right? That Spark Steakhouse.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah, it was
it's a landmark.
Yeah, it's important to be there.
I never knew you were into the mob.
Well, I was just like, I was intrigued by it.
The I am too. From time to time.
You watch Sopranos?
No, I did not.
I never watched it. I feel like I'm in the minority of people who haven't watched it.
I used to watch a website, and I can't think of his name now, that was a Godfather, but he got saved.
Wow.
Really?
I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah, he's really good. He he spent a lot of time in prison. Oh, man, I wish I could remember his name. He has a website, and he does have a podcast. And he...
might be worth a listen.
you would like him.
Yeah.
He made the most money of any family member. He came in with a scheme that he schemed the state of New York, gas money, gas tax. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he was doing it, but anyway. And his father, he served time after he admitted it. And but at some point in time, he realized this ain't worth it. I'm losing everything. And so he got saved. And his father served prison. John's his father's name. I don't know why I can't remember the guy's name. His served until he was 99, or it might have been 100 years. And he finally, and he went to see him all the time, and he finally... His father finally, at that age, being in the mafia all his life, his father, gave his heart to the Lord. Who do you got?
I got Michael Franzese.
Yeah, that's who it is.
He was Yuppie Don.
Yes.
He was Prince of the Mafia.
Yes, that's who it is.
Hmm. John Franzese.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put that on the top of the list of things I didn't think I'd learn today in here.
Top mafia boss turns to Christ.
Now, he does some things that I don't agree with. He might say a cuss word here and there, or he sells his own wine, but that's not me to say yes or no on that.
It wasn't Rocco Morelli.
Who's that?
Another guy that got saved, former mobster saved by Christ.
No.
Okay.
It was Mike Francese.
So you brought up wine. It made me think of this. So that's, we are very ADD today.
We have been all over, baby. Yeah. I have.
So I was looking something up the other day, and I read if you read the word wine in the Bible, somebody said, or this article or whatever said, wine could mean wine as in the alcoholic drink, or it could be grape juice. Is there anything to that, or is everything in the...
I don't subscribe to it.
No. Okay.
And I think,
I think when that's wine, I think it's fermented.
And Jesus turned water into wine.
Yeah.
That's not the point. The point is nobody ever done it.
Yeah.
That was the point. It's like the resurrection. Nobody's ever done that. But Jesus did it. He's back.
So the verse in I think it's Matthew or Luke, I believe, where Jesus talks about John the Baptist came eating and drinking, and you said he was crazy, and I come eating and that he was not eating and drinking, and saying he's crazy, and I've come eating and drinking, you say I'm the sinner and a drunkard.
Right. Yeah.
Does that verse, I mean, if you wanted, it doesn't conclusively say it, but is it how safe an assumption would be to say that Jesus probably drank wine in his life here?
He probably did.
I'd be willing to bet you sure did.
Okay, and, all right.
But that's not a sin. It's the other way. You can take things too far. Yeah. That's where the sin becomes.
And I think it's, I don't know what the sin
is. And whether it causes someone to stumble.
Yes, yeah.
So the reason that I bring it up is that there are, you could probably count them quicker than I could, but there are tons of places in the Bible where it says, be of sober mind. There's nothing in the Bible that says, go get drunk, it's fine. And there's nothing in the Bible that points to Jesus ever being drunk, and I firmly believe he was never intoxicated in his life. I believe. But at the same time, how in the world we get so many people going around and saying that you drink one glass of wine and you're a sinner and a terrible...
There's plenty of verses, too, that talk about... Proverbs constantly is talking about, look at the wine, it's a mocker. Strong drink is raging, and I mean, there's plenty that Solomon does his best to say, this is not good. You know, don't do it. But two, be not drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. Mm-hmm. All right. So, but it says be not drunk. Well, it doesn't say don't drink. But he also tells Timothy, for your stomach's sake, drink a little wine. So I think it became just over time that just basically, as he said, legalism. The Puritans and everything else just added that, that's the devil's juice.
And I think for the most part, there are way, 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 more, there's a lot longer list of risks associated with drinking alcohol than there are benefits. Mm-hmm. There are, I think, some benefits, and certainly even, I think there's even
there are many a person I know that have called me and asked, is this okay?
Yeah.
And the doctor told me to do it because of my heart, helping the blood pressure and whatnot. So there are some medical, Paul told Timothy, for your stomach's sake. I think the key is, all right, so you're not, sitting there getting wasted every night. You're not abusing your family. Mm-hmm. You're not throwing away your everything you got on, spending it on the bottle or whatever. Yeah.
But here's the thing that I think maybe the reason it's important for me to bring it up. It's not, again, I can't emphasize enough that there's nowhere that advocates intoxication or abuse, abusing alcohol, anything like that. But when we try to take that and turn it into thou shalt not ever
do this,
then we find ourselves in a really bad corner when somebody points out, well, Jesus, I knew Jesus turned water into wine. It was when I read the verse that I thought, you know what, it sure sounds like he actually consumed it too. Well, then if we're sitting here saying one glass, our Last Supper, we don't do it here, but it's grape juice here. But, is it safe to say the Last Supper was actual wine?
I believe it was.
Okay. I'd be willing to bet.
I think a lot of times we want to, it's either A or B. And it's not, in the scriptures, there's a lot of wiggle room. Yeah. It just depends on how you use it.
But I think it causes us to miss that wiggle room or that point. Because what we turn it into is you have to choose one or the other. Jesus, I think, would have said, it's okay to have a glass, don't have a bottle.
Right.
Okay.
Or depending, I think it's different for each person.
Yes.
True.
For myself, okay. I as a pastor, someone sees me with that. No, that's going to cause someone to stumble.
It's terrible. Ministry.
Yes. Yeah, it's ministry. He's a man of God. He's this. For some people, they don't need to have it anywhere near them because it's been. Just like for me at a buffet, I don't need to go to a buffet because I know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And it ain't going to be, I'm going to eat just right. No, I'm going to commit to sin of gluttony. And so for some people, it doesn't need to be in their life. You know, and so I think it just becomes, it's just easier to say, don't anybody do it.
Well, it's interesting to me.
Yeah, it just depends on the person.
And let's just make it where it's all wrong. And I think it's something each individual has to wrestle with.
Strictly off the top of my head, this is quick. Strictly off the top of my head, I don't know if this is accurate, but it seems to me that a lot of the places that drunkenness is brought up, gluttony is right there around it. Is it not that Proverbs, the two are always sure. there, but yeah. but it seems like the two, it's not...
They follow pretty close.
Yeah.
Because, let's just be honest, it all goes back to the lust of the flesh.
Yeah.
I want to feel better. Oh, I want to eat more. I want to... Oh, it's going to make me feel so good. This tastes so good. I'm going to just keep eating.
And a lot of the things, I think you mentioned this last week, or might have been in sermon a couple weeks ago, that a lot of the things that were on the... Okay, food, wine... Mm-hmm. Sex. There's a lot of these things that we just kind of say stay away altogether from. Yeah. When in reality, these were things that were put here by God to be used in the right way.
The right way.
To abuse any of them in the wrong way, yeah, God don't like that. And it causes
like,
a lot of
just
problems.
Just like the submission to the husband, that kind of, it yeah. leads to...
Right.
Again, you're getting outside of God's parameters.
Right.
And that's going to lead to heartache and suffering.
It's like
pain, blues, and agony.
And I think a lot of times we get too concentrated on making one thing wrong that it get too far to the right to be any good. You know what I'm saying? So it's got to be right or it's got to be wrong, and it's not that easy.
Yeah.
I remember when I started going to church, going to the movies was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? And nowadays, what do we have playing in the theater right now?
Chosen.
The Chosen.
Mom and Dad just went to watch it the other day.
Snow White. I don't know.
So, is it
Snow
wrong?
Snow White's woke now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really Mom and Dad.
So, you know, you believe that that's wrong, and anybody that goes to the movies, they're not living right.
Yeah.
So we're too far over here to be any good to anybody. And so... Why would going to the movies is wrong? Well, it depends.
What are you watching?
What you're watching.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong.
Yeah. Well, and I'll never forget, I would come home as a teenager, stayed with my grandmother. Oh, I went and saw this movie.
Yeah.
And you ought to go see it, Mama. And and my grandmother always had, I don't know, I won't be in a movie theater when the Lord comes back looking at
exactly,
something.
Exactly, yeah.
But now she would always say, looking at something I don't need to be looking at.
Well, yes.
But she was quick to say that because she'd go to a movie if it was going to be something that yeah. she wanted to see.
Well, watch a TV.
Yeah.
That's just as bad.
Yeah. But it is, okay, and that was always, my grandmother always gave me that one off. Okay, whatever you're doing tonight, if the Lord comes back and you're right in the middle of it, you better be making sure it's something right.
Yeah.
You know, and that was always the threat of, Lord comes back and I'm sitting here doing this thing.
I think if that's the case, then the Lord's not going to come back. Because Christians are doing wrong all the time.
Well,
we're not resurrection.
But for you,
yeah.
don't be doing that mess, because if he comes back, I'd hate to be caught doing something stupid.
There's going
to
be a lot of people miss that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that, it worked for me. It really did. I don't want to be caught. You know,
well, yeah, it puts
down fear, in a pool
it,
hole.
It puts you in, fear in you. That did me too. But as you get older, you just get more exposed. And
I think as you get older, you mature and you grow. Yes. It should
your faith
grow in your faith to where okay, you wrestle with each one of these
mm-hmm.
and things that I may have thought were acceptable when I was in my 20s. I look back, that was foolish. Because now as a 50-year-old man, it's a lot different. My tastes have changed. Things are don't need that, but there's going to be challenges no matter what age you are.
Yeah.
And I think the key is being grounded in the truth to be able to say, and that's where we're in Hebrews chapter 5 on Wednesday nights. That really is what spiritual maturity is. When you get to verse 5, chapter 5, verse 10, 11, and 12, and I believe it's that, or 11 through 14, spiritual maturity is not just what you do. It's being able to discern what's right and what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we get to a place to where we can discern what's right and what's wrong, or not just what's right and what's wrong, what's true and what's false?
Yeah.
And so it's about discernment is spiritual maturity. And how do you get to where you can spiritually discern? Well, You learn to drink the milk of God's word, then you grow into the meat of God's word. And the more that you're allowing that word to take root in your heart, the more that you'll find out, oh, no, I don't need to be doing that. Yeah. Or, you know, for me, I think I've used this illustration. For me, I've never wanted to gamble on the golf course because I know I'm going to lose. And why do I want to give my money away? But if I'm playing with somebody that's equal partners when I was younger or equal skill level, we'll play for a nickel. We'll play for a quarter. When the Lord jumped all over my stuff riding home, said, you might as well be playing for $1 million. It's the same thing. And I said, whoa. And so the Lord just showed me, okay, maybe I don't need to be doing that. And again, I think it just... it's a nickel, Lord. No, it's the whole.
Well, I had that thought of
around gist of it.
The brackets. I didn't do a bracket this year, and I haven't done brackets a whole lot.
I do them for fun.
But
I like to prove my knowledge.
Well, that was a good. So I have not had any desire.
I haven't missed one. No, I'm just kidding. Perfect bracket.
I haven't had a whole lot of desire to gamble. Period. In a long, long time. It's just something that I think part of it's just kind of it didn't end well at all, and it got maybe a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth and things like that. But at the same time, I don't mean that. I got a lot of my best friends they love to gamble, and I don't think it's a problem for them and knock yourselves out. And I don't, you know, it's not, they're a heck of a lot more responsible about it, and it's more entertainment for them than it might have been for me. But at the same time, brackets come around, and I was like, you know, I really wish somebody was doing some brackets so I can get them. And I thought, well, I mean, I can, you know, I bet so-and-so is doing one for free. And I thought, what's the point? If there's not any money on, what's the point? And I thought, I guess that's kind of that was part of the problem for me. Is if there wasn't any money in it, then what's the point of doing this to begin with?
But for me, it is part of the point. Is we do it as a family.
Right.
Renee fills out one. Nate fills out one. We usually do it as a family. Of course, Nicole fills out hers, and it's always based on colors or mascots.
Yeah.
She don't know nothing, but she's won a year or two. She has won a year or two because she might recognize. She don't get caught in the, oh, this is a game that, no, she just knows the name.
Yeah.
She knows Duke is going to win a lot of times. She knows that, you know, and so
she's playing.
So
the
it's a lot. And if you did the chalk and just went number ones, look who's in the final four. You did all right this year.
Yeah.
And so for us, it was always fun, and it was always, or it might be, all right, everybody has to chip in by dinner. Okay, well, we're going to dinner anyway. It's not really for money.
Yeah.
And so it was. For me, it was fun. But I know for certain people, and I think it goes back to what I'm saying, for certain people, man, that drink may lead to another drink, to 55 drinks.
Right.
Where for some people, just family playing for, all right, loser's going to buy supper tonight. Yeah. Well, somebody's going to buy it anyway. Yeah. And it ends up being me anyway because I ain't got no money.
Yeah. But do you think a lot of times, and I think this is the denomination that I grew up in. I believe that how I grew up. I believe their doctrine, which is about the same as here, too.
Just might be their ethics or how they live out their doctrine.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to.
And, sorry, I didn't mean to jump the gun for you.
You just go ahead.
Well, I was raised at the coast.
But I think a lot of times we get the scripture mixed up with come ye out among the world and be a separate people.
Right.
Yeah, the world drinks. We all drink.
Right.
The world goes to movies. We want to be separate. We don't go to the movies.
And there is a difference.
But that can lead you down into Mormonism
and stuff like that. It can lead to legalism, sure. Yes. At the same time.
But we're separate.
At the same time, there is a separation.
It's a prideful thing when you get out to legalism.
It can be.
Yeah.
I had two dreams, back-to-back nights this week that were just kind of, it was weird because I had these really vivid dreams and I immediately woke up middle of the night. And one of them I had to chew on for a little bit before I really got is there a reason for this?
Yeah.
I finally got to one.
When it's that vivid.
Yeah, when it's that vivid. But the second night especially was one, I didn't have to think 2 seconds to figure out the point of it. The dream that I was having is I don't know where I was, but I was running really late and had the kids with me, and I was running just super late, and I was being hateful to everybody, and I was just whatever.
Well, wow.
Yeah.
You got to confess when I wake up.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking I might have actually lived this one out in real life probably at some point. Not too far, long ago, probably. So I wake up in the middle of the night with this. Well, I'm sorry, before the dream's over. So what ends up happening with this is I'm just every turn that I take seems to be getting me further and further away from the destination. I'm getting so aggravated, and I'm walking on. We've gotten out of the car, we're on foot by this point, and some lady pulls me aside and starts reading scripture to me. And I remember in my dream thinking, or might have even said this, like, I know the Bible, I am a Christian, leave me alone, I'm in a hurry, I'm busy, and whatever. And it was about that time I woke up, and I'm just, and it was so vivid. It was 4 a.m, and I'm like, okay, what was the point of this? And I'm sitting there thinking, well, simple. The way you act is going to tell people whether or not you're a believer. In my dream here, I'm not acting like a believer. I can preach it all day long. I can talk about it all day long. I can read the Bible all day long. But I wasn't living it in that dream.
Yep.
So what happens? Well, other believers see you as a lost person. They try to save you in your dream. Well, that's, there's, I think we think of it a lot of times, we're supposed to wear it a certain way. But it's also that, hey, if you want, in that was such an embarrassing example. Thank God it was a dream. Because it's like, oh yeah, the way I live is what testifies as to whether or not I am or not.
It is, and again, it goes back to what Kenny was saying. All right, if I'm supposed to be different than the world, and I think it just goes back to, you know, the kingdom of heaven is not whether you eat or drink, what you eat or drink, but it's righteousness and hope and the Spirit of God is what Romans tells us. And I think that's what we always have to keep in mind, that it's not so much about, oh, okay, I can't eat this, I can't drink that, but it's and I want to find that because it's one of my favorites. Go ahead, do something.
Well, you already stole my thunder.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here we go. For the kingdom of God is not eating and drinking, but righteousness and peace and joy in the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And that, there it is.
Romans
14 and 17, I think.
13 to 14. Chapter 13 to 14.
14. Now I got to go back. Romans 14.
Yeah.
And it was Romans 14, 17. For the kingdom of God is not eating or drinking, but righteousness and peace and joy in the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And it goes on and says, for the one who serves Christ finds this acceptable and the other one does not. He's arguing. No, it's up before the Lord. You've got to make sure you're right with the Lord. That you
was 14, 13.
14.
That's why. I think that's why I can't remember my verses as well.
No, he's just trying to throw you off, man.
I've got to copy all this when I get home.
And Kenny's got to head east.
Yeah.
Have a safe trip.
Please travel safe.
I'll do my best. These were...
All right. Don't
bye, come back. Everybody. My wife loves salmon. My wife would eat salmon every night. I can't stand it. I think it's the sorriest fish there is in the book.
Well, the one thing about salmon... You can't.
That's how you really feel. Don't hold anything back now.
That's one fish you cannot mess up.
But now, tuna's the best fish to eat, I believe.
You like it raw?
Mm-hmm. But I also like it cooked, just lightly.
Now, where do you get your raw tuna?
Well, I don't know that it's really tuna, but I get it from Aldi's. They got a frozen tuna. Now, again, it might yellow be something fin? Else.
Blackfin, yellowfin, or bluefin?
It might not even be meat.
So it's ahi tuna. It's about that big. It's a tuna steak. You buy them 3 to a pack, and it's like $4. So I know it ain't real tuna. But I will say this.
$4, but that's, you should be paying about $13 per tuna.
No, this is, I ain't paying that much.